Welcome to our deep dive. When you look at the financial stability of the euro area, well, the ghost of the 2010 to 2014 sovereign debt crisis is never really far away, is it?
No, it certainly looms large. We know things got incredibly unstable back then.
Right, but the big question now for policymakers today is, does financial fragmentation, when markets start segmenting across borders, does that make the whole euro area fundamentally more brittle? More vulnerable to the next big global shock.
That's arguably the most critical structural question for the Eurozone. Fragmentation, well, it messes with monetary policy transmission. It blocks the free flow of capital,
And
essentially.
that's the theory anyway.
Exactly. But theory only gets you so far. The real goal of rigorous analysis, like the one we're looking at, is to measure how much more fragile things actually get when fragmentation is high.
And to get those numbers, we are diving deep into a specific piece of research. It's the IMF working paper called Euro Area Financial Fragmentation and Bond Market Stability.
Yes, by Benjamin Mosk and Nedder Devet.
That's the one. Let me just read the abstract quickly. It sets the stage perfectly. It says, "We study the implications of euro area financial fragmentation for bond market stability during global risk shocks. We propose a three-step approach. First, we construct a novel indicator of fragmentation based on the divergence in sovereign bond yield dynamics using principal component analysis. Second, we identify global risk shocks using a sign-restricted Bayesian VR model. Third, we employ nonlinear local projections to investigate whether bond market fragility is amplified during times of elevated fragmentation. Our findings suggest that both sovereign and corporate bond markets across the euro area are significantly more vulnerable to global risk shocks when financial fragmentation is elevated."
So that's our mission today, then, to really unpack that the technically rigorous three-step process they used.
Exactly. And figure out precisely how much more fragile these bond markets become when the system is fragmented.
Okay, let's jump into step one, building that fragmentation indicator. This is, well, it's absolutely crucial because fragmentation is what we call a latent variable.
Meaning you can't just measure it directly off a screen. It's not like a stock price.
Precisely. You can't just look at the difference in yield levels, the spread between, say, German bonds and Italian BTPs.
Right, because if I see the Italy-Germany spread widen, how do I know if that's fragmentation or just, markets thinking Italy's fiscal situation looks a bit riskier that week?
That is the absolute key distinction. Spreads exist normally. They fluctuate based on fundamentals, debt to GDP, growth outlooks, fiscal health. That's normal market function. Fragmentation is something deeper. It's a breakdown in the market mechanics. It's when yields in different parts of the euro area stop moving together, when investors stop treating it like one single monetary union.
So the smart insight here was to look at the dynamics, how yields are changing, not just where they are.
Exactly right. They used principal component analysis, PCA, but applied it to the weekly changes, the first differences, in 5-year sovereign bond yields, not the levels.
And what data did they feed into this PCA?
They used weekly data going way back from January 2001 right up to September 2024. And they focused on the big five EA economies: France, Germany, Italy, Spain, and the Netherlands.
Okay. The core players.
And the PCA on those yield changes spat out two really clear components, PC1 and PC2.
Right. PC1, I'm guessing, was the general market movement, like a rising tide lifting all boats or sinking them.
Yeah, you can think of PC1 as capturing the co-movements, the common shock, like a market beta. It's the stuff hitting everyone more or less together.
The PC2, that's where the interesting part is for fragmentation.
That's the one. PC2 beautifully captured the core periphery divergence dynamic when they looked at the factor loadings.
How much each country's yield change contributed to that component.
Exactly. The loading showed yield changes in the core countries, France, Germany, Netherlands, moving in the opposite direction to the yield changes in the periphery, Italy and Spain.
Ah, so one group's yields go up, the others go down in response to the same underlying, whatever PC2 represents. That is fragmentation in action.
It's the classic crisis dynamic for a monetary union under stress. Pure divergence.
So, how did they turn that PC2 insight into the actual indicator?
They define the fragmentation indicator as the share of the total variance in yield changes that was explained by PC2. And they calculated this over a 12-month moving window to smooth it out a bit.
Makes sense. Did this indicator actually track, history? Did it spike when we think it should have?
Perfectly. It peaked dramatically right in the middle of the European sovereign debt crisis.
Yeah.
It really validated the approach, showing it was capturing periods of high systemic instability and market divergence.
Okay, that feels like a solid step one. We have a state variable, a way to measure when the fragmentation switch is flipped to high.
Right.
So moving to step two, they needed a clean external stressor, a global shock. You mentioned they didn't just use something simple like the VIX index.
No, that would be too crude. You need an identified orthogonal shock, something purely external and statistically independent from other factors driving markets within the Eurozone.
And how did they get that?
They used a pretty sophisticated tool, a sign-restricted Bayesian vector autoregression model, a BVAR. They were following a methodology laid out by Brandt and others back in 2021.
Okay, BVAR. Why that specific model? What does it let you do?
The crucial goal is to disentangle all the different things pushing markets around. The BVAR lets you do that by imposing some structure.
Structure based on economic theory.
Exactly. They fed it daily financial market data, things like the 10-year Euro OIS rate, which reflects policy expectations, Euro STOXX and S&P 500 returns for equity markets, the Euro-USD exchange rate, and the 10-year U.S. Treasury yield as a global benchmark.
A broad set of inputs.
Yes. And then they impose sign restrictions. These are basically assumptions about the immediate impact of different types of shocks. For instance, a monetary tightening shock should raise rates, maybe strengthen the currency, and perhaps lower stocks.
That makes sense.
By defining these expected reaction patterns for different shocks like EA monetary policy shocks, U.S. monetary policy shocks, macroeconomic news shocks, they could filter those out.
Leaving behind
the global risk shock factor, a cleaner measure of just pure external financial stress hitting the system. This makes sure that when they test the market reaction later, it's genuinely the response to that global risk, not muddied by, say, an ECB announcement happening at the same time.
Got it. So step one gives us the fragmentation state. Step two gives us the external shock. Now for step three, putting them together to see if high fragmentation amplifies the shock's impact. This is where the core findings come out.
Right. For this, they used a nonlinear panel local projections method. It builds on work by Jorda from 2023. It's quite cutting edge.
And why nonlinear? What does that add?
It's ideal because it allows the response of the bond market, the impulse response, to actually depend on the state the market is in.
Ah, so the market's reaction to the shock can be different depending on whether fragmentation from step one is high or low.
Precisely. They use something called a smooth transition function, an STF. It uses the fragmentation indicator we discussed to smoothly separate the sample data into high fragmentation and low fragmentation regimes. It's not a sharp on-off switch, but a gradual transition.
Okay, that sounds realistic. But how do they measure the market's reaction? You can't just compare a 10 basis point jump in German CDS to a 10 basis point jump in Italian CDS, right? The starting points are so different.
Excellent point. Italy already has a much higher underlying credit risk premium than Germany. So a raw change in basis points doesn't tell you about relative vulnerability increase.
So what did they measure instead?
They looked at the responsiveness of credit risk premiums using daily data on 5-year sovereign credit default swap, or CDS, spreads, and also index-level option-adjusted corporate spreads, OAS.
Okay, both government and corporate risk.
Yes, and they measured the response as the log difference of the premium, scaled by 100.
Log difference, so yeah. Essentially the percentage change.
That's a great way to think about it. It approximates the percentage change, or the elasticity, of the spread in response to that one standard deviation global risk shock.
So it controls for the baseline level. You're asking, does the percentage jump in risk double or triple when fragmented, regardless of whether the starting spread was 20 basis points or 200?
Exactly. It absorbs that linear effect of the starting credit level and focuses purely on the amplification caused by fragmentation interacting with the shock.
Okay, methodology clear. Let's get to the results. Sovereign CDS first, the government risk. What was the big finding when the market was in that high fragmentation regime?
The finding was, well, pretty dramatic and statistically significant right from the first day after the shock hits. In the higher fragmentation regime, a one standard deviation global risk shock led to an immediate 1.4% rise in sovereign CDS premiums.
Wow, 1.4% just from a standard global shock hitting a fragmented system.
Yeah, it's a substantial jump.
So the market's basically saying, if you're integrated, this global shock is maybe a minor headache. But if you're fragmented, the same shock feels like a major blow.
That's a perfect way to put it. And crucially, when they looked at the lower fragmentation regime, that responsiveness, that 1.4% jump, was significantly weaker or even statistically indistinguishable from zero.
So fragmentation really is the amplifier. It turns up the volume on global risk.
Undeniably.
And fascinatingly, this wasn't just about governments getting slammed. They looked at corporate bonds, too, using those option-adjusted spreads, the OAS. Did the trouble spill over?
Oh, absolutely. The spillover was clear. Corporate OAS sensitivity was also significantly higher during those high fragmentation periods. A global risk shock doesn't just hit sovereign debt. It ripples through and chokes off corporate credit, too.
Making it harder for companies across the Eurozone to borrow and invest when things are already stressed.
Precisely. And there's an interesting nuance with the corporate debt response.
What was that?
The paper noted that the corporate spread response seemed more persistent. It didn't just jump immediately. It sort of accumulated over time.
So the pain lasted longer.
Yeah. The response accumulated to roughly a 1% change by the third horizon, so a few days out. The paper suggests this might reflect lower market liquidity in euro area corporate bond markets compared to the deep liquid sovereign markets.
Right. So when the market's stressed and fragmented, maybe corporate bond prices take longer to adjust fully. The volatility kind of lingers.
That seems to be the interpretation, which could mean that the negative impact on corporate investment and activity drags on for longer after the initial shock hits, especially during fragmented periods.
Okay, now for what might be the most, let's say, politically charged finding. The common view, or maybe stereotype, is that fragmentation is mainly an issue for the vulnerable periphery countries, like Italy and Spain. Did the results bear that out? Was the fragility concentrated there?
Well, that's what makes this really interesting. The answer is definitively no. Fragmentation hurts everyone.
Everyone. Even the core.
Yes. Now, the effect was more pronounced in the periphery. They saw a significant 1.46% response in their CDS premiums during high fragmentation. That's slightly higher than the average.
Okay, so slightly more sensitive.
But, and this is the crucial, but the core countries, so France, Germany, the Netherlands grouped together, also showed a substantial and statistically significant positive response. Their CDS premiums jumped by 1.13% on average.
1.13%, that's huge. It's almost as large as the periphery response.
It's very significant. It demolishes the idea that fragmentation is just someone else's problem if you're sitting in Berlin or Paris or Amsterdam.
So the takeaway is, when the financial plumbing of the monetary union gets clogged up by fragmentation, the core countries are nearly as exposed to that amplified global risk shock as the periphery.
Exactly. It proves fragmentation isn't a localized issue. It's a systemic flaw. It makes the entire single monetary union, core included, less resilient. That 1.13% response in the core shows even fiscally strong nations pay a price in terms of disproportionate stress when the union's markets aren't properly integrated.
So let's synthesize this. The paper cleverly constructed this fragmentation indicator based not on levels, but on the divergence in how yields were changing that PC2 factor.
Mm.
And using that, plus an isolated global risk shock, they empirically confirm that fragmentation acts like a magnifying glass. It takes global risks and turns them into significantly larger, measurable jumps in credit risk premiums across all member states, core and periphery alike.
That's the core finding, nailed down with robust econometrics.
So what does this mean for you, the listener, and for policymakers?
Well, it really underscores the importance of efforts towards deeper financial integration, things like the Capital Markets Union Project. They're not just academic exercises about optimizing capital flows.
They're about structural stability.
Exactly. They are concrete tools for building resilience. The benefit of integration, based on these findings, is literally measurable.
Mm-hmm.
Lower volatility, greater stability when the next inevitable global shock comes knocking. Think of it like a direct insurance policy against systemic risk spreading like wildfire.
A more integrated market dampens the shocks. A fragmented one amplifies them. Simple as that, but now quantified.
Precisely. And that leads us to a final, maybe provocative thought, picking up on that corporate debt finding.
Go on.
The paper showed that the increased vulnerability during fragmentation wasn't just magnified, it was also persistent in corporate bond spreads. The damage lingered.
Right. Yeah. Potentially because of lower liquidity.
So if market integration efforts stall, or even go backwards, are we setting ourselves up for the next crisis, not just to hit hard, but to stick around longer in the corporate sector? If instability poisons corporate credit markets, impacting investment and jobs for months or years because of this persistent magnified risk, well, the real-world consequences of failed integration could stretch far beyond just government borrowing costs.
And they looked mainly at index level, likely higher-rated corporate debt. Imagine the impact deeper down the credit spectrum.
Exactly. High-yield corporate bonds, bank debt. If fragmentation persists, where will the next fault line appear when global risk spikes again? It might be in a sector where the lingering damage is even more painful. Something to think about.